UTES 7, 13th of June, Reb Dudi Rosenberg, Spies, Flies and Lies.
And flies?
Sounds like Trump.
The Chedisharim met Reb Yankov Aryeh Radziminer, and he found him looking downcast. When he asked Reb Yankov, perhaps it was concerning his health, and maybe he wasn't feeling well, Reb Yankov said to him that these sedras describing the Eden's repetitive sinning in the Midbar cause him to feel ill. Especially, we're speaking about a generation, a dog dyer. How could they transgress such iniquities? Chedisharim told him, "Fin zayre avayres ot man geschriben teure, fin inzere mitzvahs veivayz." So, from the avayres of the people of the Mapilim, the Meraglim, Koirach v'chaladusay, teure was written. From our mitzvahs, who knows what's going to be? Reb Yankov was encouraged and brings us to our spies, our flies, and our lies. So let's start with the spies. We're so used to criticizing and undermining the Meraglim for what we perceive as their follies. What ideally might be a more meaningful approach? So let's start with the end of the seven. Parshas Tzitzis. The words are Ireisem Oisoi. Beginning of the Seder, Veyosuru es Eretz Kenan. So we have the first similarity. Ireisem es Uretz Mahi, Ireisem Oisoi. V'loy sosuru achrei levavchem, soy v'yosuru es eretz kenan. So we have the ereisem and ureisem and v'loy sosuru v'yosuru. So we know that there's a general rule that the end of the seder and the beginning of the seder are connected. Question is how. So let's start by understanding that one of the mitzvahs of tzitzis is that it should have benosni al tzitzis akunov psil techeles. There should be a strand of blue wool in the tzitzis, which is supposed to be doime le yam. Yam is doime le rukia. Rukia is doime le kise akuvot. And if you ask Mr. Average, what does the tzitzis remind you of? He'd probably tell you British Telecom. Yeah, if you look at your receiver and the windy wire at the end of it. But then again, you could ask a person after sitting in a deck chair at the beach and he's watching the sea, what he remembers, and ask him if he thinks of Rikia and the Kisei HaKuvod or of other things. You know? Now, Dester points out that when you look at Big Day Tzivoinen, it's a halucha this, looking at colorful dresses of ladies in shop windows, it's prohibited as it may evoke inappropriate thoughts. But maybe not. Maybe if you look at a dress which is colored light blue, you'll think of the Kisei HaKuvod. But the thread, forgive the pun, that ties all this together is how you perceive something is what you are. Some Eden, when they view blue, connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam and with the Kisei HaKuvod. And some people shouldn't look and ogle at shop windows and dresses because they might fear Machshav Azuras. So let's come back to the Meraglim. So many questions have been hypothetically posed regarding the incrimination of them. They were asked for their opinion. They gave it. If spying was such a sinister mission, why in the Haftarah did Yeshua and Pinchas repeat exactly the same thing? In Devarim, as Rashi quotes, Moshe states, "Vayitav be'einei haduvo." So it's ve'einai v'loy b'einai mukoy. It was something which found favor in my eyes. The plan was attractive. I saw the Meraglim as a good idea, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Then why did the Meraglim deserve condemnation? Moshe himself saw it as a good idea. If the Rebbeinu Shlom, now let's think about it. If the Rebbeinu Shlom wanted these people to establish an agricultural evaluation or an anthropological assessment of the land, then he would have dispatched farmers and anthropologists. But if the objective, for example, would have been an offensive tactic, he would have sent military strategists. Instead, what did he send? 12 Frakten, Rajavulkes, Halbashir, Vasazokken, sent their 12 Gdoyle Oilom, every single one of them, Oilom, Rushe, B'nai Yisua, El Haimu, Shain Yidin, Ugezein Yidin, Rushe, the people. So, just to ponder for a second, who is speaking about here? Just one of the Meraglim substituted the greatest leader that walked the face of the earth, ever. Yeshia Benin. So the others must have been of a similar caliber. Yes. So let's move on. The Rishonim speak, especially the Ramban highlights, that Moshe said to the Meraglim, and this is elucidated more in the Vurim. And the Pusik says there, Vatikrivin Elai Kilchem, describing the saga of the Meraglim, and you came and encountered me, Vatoimri, and you said, Nishlechu Alushem Lefunayni, let us send people ahead of us, Vyachperuluni Esuret to spy the land. What was the purpose? Says the Pusik clearly. Note, Vyushivi Esun Duvo, to bring us back information, Esaderech Ashenalebo, the way which we should go up, which means the approach towards the land, and to which cities we should enter. Now, it says here clearly that it wasn't a debate as to whether to enter, it was only a question of how to enter. But whether or not to go into the land was never a question. And for that, we need to have a level of leaders and representatives that view the land from a spiritual perspective. Einehu Edo, men of vision that would fulfill the Ir'ei Betuv Yerushalayim, to see the good and the potential of this land. Seeing Eretz Yisrael as a platform and a vehicle to achieve closeness to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And certainly not from a selfish viewpoint of potentially losing their seats of authority, even as the Sfurim write in the Midbar, that they all enjoyed mon min hashamayim, be'er, water from supernatural sources, a constant audience with Moshe Rabbeinu, min haboike ad erev, teaching them when they're surrounded by anan ha'kuvoy, clouds of glory. Why to change and now become farmers and agriculturists? But you were sent as emissaries to view through spirituality and the highest possible level of fulfilling any instruction is to do so because the Ribbono Shel Olam said so. Un eigene Cheshbonos, without your own agenda, to sublimate and to shelve any personal opinion or judgment for the Hashem's will. So that's so much for the spies. Let's move on to the flies. V'anihi b'aineni k'chaguvim v'chein hoyinu b'aineh. So of course the Chaguvim syndrome, much has been written about it pre-Freud, and the Kotzke Rebbe had two famous interpretations of this. The first one was used to say, Adishpistach yashmata et mentretnafgir, which loosely translated that if you feel like a doormat, then people will tread all over you. And therefore, v'anehi b'aineinu k'chaguvim, if you feel like you are a locust, then cheinu yinu b'aineihem, it stands to reason that indeed that's the way you will appear to other people too. On another occasion, the Rebbe said, why are you taking a cheshbon? Why are you making a calculation of what the other person is thinking? So you're entitled to say, "Vanhi veinenu kachadovim." I felt, we felt like locusts, so small. But how do you know that's how we looked in their eyes? Do you know how other guys looking at you? But that's the essence, as they say, of projection or projective identification in the trade. But a novel thought which I heard only, I heard it last year actually from Rebbe Greenblatt Sr., who's Joey Goodfeld's brother-in-law. And he told me this thought, which I loved it, and I'm going to share it with you. Rashi says, on that point of Anhi ben eini kachadovim, Rashi says there, it doesn't matter, it says, Shemani Oimrim, they said amongst themselves, the giants, Zeb said, Nemulim, Yesh Bekrumim, Kanushim. Like Lilliput. We saw little men running around there on the floor, and they look like ants. And the ants look like humans. They're schlepping this big fruit. Now I checked the Gemur in Soita, which is a source, and the Gemur doesn't mention the word Nemulim. But Rashi uses the word Nemulim. The Pusik speaks of locusts. Pusik says, Vadehi b'neinu kachagovim, v'cheinu yinu b'neinu. So it's a remarkable change of Rashi. So he said like this. Shlomo HaMelech says, Lech el anamulu v'chakein. Go and observe the ant, and you will become wise. Because the ant is an amazing creature. He'll never consume the amount that he collects. He's involved entirely in communal concerns. He drags and schleps on his back quantities that he wouldn't consume in 100 lifetimes. And is entirely an altruistic creature. In contrast, the locust, he depicts egocentricity. They descend as a plague to consume, sich unzufressen, and fill himself to satiation, and when he can't move because he's eaten everything that's on the tree, and they pick themselves up, and they all fly away. Now the giants, the Anukim, they saw little men dragging huge grapes, and they're taking these gigantic fruits for the benefit of others, like ants do. So hence they described them as Nemulim. But the truth, however, was the opposite. That the spies had a purely egocentrical agenda. And these fruits were brought purely to impress on the undesirable characteristics of a land which they said was Eretz Recheles Yoshveu, a country that consumes and devours its inhabitants. So that they were assured that they would remain leaders in the Midbar, in the wilderness. So consumed were they by their own personal agenda that they didn't even hear or register the word Nemulim. But they knew the truth, and they described themselves as Chagovim. V'anihi v'einayni kechagovim. And they were certain, v'cheinuini v'einayim, that they must appear like that in the giant's eyes too. So let me digress a moment to share another couple of psychological insights which are beautiful. One of them is from Elie Meir Bloch. He said in the beginning of the Seder, it says that they were supposed to check out the city. And they said, Habamachanim im bemifzurim. Habamachanim im bemifzurim, sorry, is essentially saying that, see the towns. Are they built up, or are they open plan? Here we are. So Rashi says, that you'd see from their superficially viewed, you'd see if they have mighty fortresses that would indicate strong nations, if they have castles and moats, that shows that they're tough. But if they have Bedouins in tents, normally would have thought about it that these people are a walkover. I'll give you an example. If you have a class bully, and his need is to subjugate and to terrorize the other children, he's really weak and insecure inside him, and that's the need to bully other children. Or the man who enters a room, and he makes a lot of noise, and he's seeking to be the center of attention, is invariably suffering from a diminished sense of self. Because the really confident ones feel comfortable without making much noise. And Rashi says, Echuzok hu harufe. So Rashi says, Simen musaluhem. What's the simen? Moshe shared with them a profound insight. If they dwell in open, unprotected areas, then they're strong. However, if they're surrounded by walls and by fortresses, they're invariably weak. Don't be deceived by externalities. Because that Bedouin will retaliate like a ferocious lion if he's provoked. But the well-protected soldier hiding behind all that weaponry is probably a cowardly weakling. And I thought that maybe there's another chinuch allusion to the same distinction. Habmachanim imevitzurim. Is it better to insulate children or to isolate children? Do we ghettoize our progeny with protective walls, living in denial of technology and of communication? Or do we live openly but try to imbue spiritual fortification to withstand the corrupting influences of the society outside? Habemachanim in bemifzurim. The walls of a little Yiddish area might be a sign of weakness, but the integration may be a sign of inner spiritual strength. It's a nice controversial topic, but not for Tuesday morning. And we're certainly not going to attempt to elucidate it. From there, I'll share another interpretation of Rashi, which says, Shlach lecho anushim, so Rashi says, ledatcho. And then, Rashi describes how the Rebbein Shlolem says, Ani umar tiluchem shehi toivo. I describe this land as a good land. Then it says a very, very remarkable intervention here. It says here, Chayayhem, the Rebbein Shlolem saying, by the life, which is a lotion of Shvir, Shani noisiluhem mukoim litois, I will give them a pit to fall into. I will give them a place where they'll make error. I'll give them a chance to make a mistake. In the end of the day, they will not enter this land and they will not inherit it. So, are they being invited to be ensnared into a trap? Is this a methodology of an all-merciful and compassionate God? So let's go back to school. We were asked as children to cover exercise books with cellophane. Remember? And when you get home and you try to put the cellophane on the book, if chas v'shulam a bubble formed on one side and one corner, so you try to press it down. Inevitably or invariably, the bubble came up on the other side. So you've tried to press it down again. And then lo and behold, it came up in the next corner. Sometimes, as parents or as community leaders, are led to believe that we're able to control everything. But sometimes when insurgence and resistance is felt, it can be wisest to let the mistake be pursued all the way, letting a child commit the error, make the mistake, but grow from the experience. If you try to quell it, squash that bubble, it'll only raise its ugly head elsewhere. And that was the Eibishter's advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. I told them when they left Mitzrayim, Ele eschem me'oini Mitzrayim el eretz toivu. The land is good. The land is beautiful. But evidently, they have their doubts. And sometimes, the only way to let them go down that road, perish in that wilderness, and even delay the outcome, the inevitable outcome, by 39 years. Chayayim sha'ani noisai luhem mukoim litois. Sometimes they need space. They need space to facilitate a very serious, consequential error. So now we've done the spies and the flies, and we're up to the lies. So the Gemur in Soite gives the Meraglim the accolade of Shakruna. The Pusik says, and this is a nice diyuk, it says, Buniel Uretz Ashesh Lachtuni. This is the Meraglim on their way back. And they come and they report to the Eden and they say, V'gam zuvas chulov idvash hu v'zeh piryon. This land is flowing with milk and honey, and this is the fruit which we brought back as a sample. To which Rashi says, an amazing intervention, he says, Kol tvasheke, whenever you want to tell a lie, She'ein oimrim bo iktsas emes b'tchilusoi, and you don't insert an element of truth in the beginning to introduce it, ein miskar, it's not going to hold water. And therefore, they had to say something truthful at the beginning, which was describing the beauty of the land, in order so that when they came finally to the crunch, to plant the lies, that they would be miskar. Why don't we give them the benefit of the doubt? Isn't there mitzvah? Have you done as kaludam with kafschus? Maybe no. Perhaps they genuinely wished to praise the land and its magnificent fruit. But who's treitman the source? Why is it interpreted this way? So the answer is brought from another story in Bereishis, where Rivka was asked by Eliezer two questions. Eliezer, the servant Eved Avrom, came to her and he said, Basmiat, whose daughter are you? Yesh Mukoim Mirch Lulin, has it got any place where for us to rest? I've got here a whole entourage of men. So she responded in sequence. Bas Basil Anochi, I'm the daughter of the Suel, and there's plenty of place in our house, in our home for you to lodge. Because this is the answer of the wise. Heshi Vusom Al Rishon Rishon Val Achoin Achoin. Sequence. Moshe too asked the Meraglim several questions to check on. First he asked them regarding the inhabitants. If you look at the Pusik, it says very clearly here, Vayishlachoyse Moshe Nusir says Kenuan, and he said, Ureisem es Uretz Mahi, the first one was, Ve'es hu'om ha'yoyshevu levu. He asked them, are they b'machnim imibiv tzurem? Are they strong or weak? So clearly the first question was about people. Subsequently, Moshe Rabbeinu asked them, Imur uretz hashmeinu him uzu. Now tell me about the nature of the land as far as its fertility, how it ripens with regards to fruit and plantation for agriculture. So that was question one and question two. But when they came, they reversed their response. And they spoke about the land first, and they said, the illusion of Buni el Uretz Asher Shlachtuni, we were there, V'gam Zuvas Chulo Medvashi. It's a place which is flowing with milk and honey. Hold on a second. The first question I asked you was to investigate the nature of the inhabitants. not the fruit. And only then did they say, oh, Efes, ki azu oma yoshei bekibwa. And Amulek is sitting over here, and this is the Eretz Achelas Yoshveu, it's a dangerous place, these are warriors. So Rashi says, hold on a second. If you did that, there must be a reason why you did so. And Meile Rashi says, why did they reverse the sequence? You should know, because they were liars. And the reason they did so was, kol dvar sheker she'ein oimrim boi k'tzas emes b'tchinusay, and this guy in the Soifoyle, the purpose was sinister, and the reason for it was that they wanted to plant an element of truth, so that later when they conveyed the lies, that the lies would take a plant and actually take root, and it would be believed. So much for the spies, flies, and lies. Now we started with tzitzis. Let's conclude with a story about tzitzis. After the Second World War, General Eisenhower procured for the Klosenberger Rebbe Tashmishi Kedisha. Amongst them, which he brought, were four sets of tzitzis. Strings, not the whole Abakamas. However, there were 150 survivors in that DIP, which stormed the Rebbe and begging for the tzitzis and asking to have them. So the Klosenberger Rebbe, faced with the onslaught, he had no choice but to suggest that they're going to make a goyel, a lottery, to determine who will be the recipient. There was a young Gerechuset who was called Mendel Pshitri, and he was from Lodz. He went up to the Rebbe, and he was still wearing his concentration camp shirt, and he ripped it one side, and then the other side, and he said, Rebbe, I'm chayv mit der Reise. I'm wearing a baggage of Abba Kampfers. I need the tzitzis. You have to give them to Mina. Now the Klosenberger Rebbe was moved to tears by this activity, but he said, decision is a decision. We said a lottery, and that's how we're going to determine it. And if you're really sincere, the Eibstadt helfen has given 150 participants. They put the lots into the bag, and deep inside the Rebbe came out with the fourth one, which was chosen, and the tension was thick. All the survivors waiting for a precious pair of tzitzis of strings. And then there was a huge outcry, reverberating the whole room, saying, Mendel Pshitrig was the last winner, and he got those tzitzis. So we finish off saying, Ereisem Oisoi. The way a man perceives, as we started, is where the man really is. The way he sees things is indicative of what sort of a person he is. Here was a young man, bereft of a father, a mother, brothers, sisters, money, even his health. And he had literally, just the shirt on his back, which he used to pursue an attachment with his Creator. Yizchartem es kol mitzvois Hashem. Maybe the Eibishter help, we should merit to see spirituality, to see spiritually, to live spiritually, so that every day is the Torah way.
Thank you.